Chromosomes, little strands of nucleic acids and proteins, are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm thrilled to have Sean Glaze on the show today. Sean is a speaker, author, and the owner of Great Results Team Building. Well, Sean, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted to spend this time with you today. Thank you so much for making the time.
Lisa, I'm so excited to spend the time with you and looking forward to a great conversation about leadership and culture and maybe a little something extra.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I know that you've got a lot of experience in this area, but we're going to get into it. I'm just going to tell our audience just a little bit. You know, you're a speaker, author, founder of Great Results Team Building. You have a background in education and coaching, but you've taken your lessons from the court to the corporate world, and you're a prolific author. You got 5 leadership parables, which I love, including The Unexpected Leader Will Stay. We'll talk about some of these, The Unexpected Leader, Staying Coachable, and your latest book that just came out, right, in June, What Effective Leaders Do. And I have that book as well.
Woo-hoo.
And we should have, you know, at the end, we will take a picture with both of us holding our books. Okay. Great, great book. And that just came out in June. You've got so much wisdom to share. Before we get into all of that, I really would love to talk a little bit about growing up. Where did you grow up? What did you like to do as a little boy?
Growing up, I would absolutely, I think that's a fantastic question. It's one that I'll often ask because how you got where you're at and what was your childhood like? Tell me something about that. Those are pretty powerful questions to build some connection and appreciation for who somebody is. And I was probably overblessed, not necessarily because my family had a whole lot of financial security or success. We honestly struggled when I was younger, but I had a neighborhood full of kids that were around my age. And, back in the early to mid 80s, when I'm, out playing as a teenager, it was, you leave in the morning and come back home at night. And it was Nerf football and wiffle ball and fishing and hiking and who knows however many things with, it was about, probably a dozen guys within a year or two of each other. And between that and when Atari and Nintendo first came out, we stayed pretty busy.
Right. Do you remember Pong?
Oh, yeah, that was that very first one before they had the block-headed football Atari and the whole thing that has now led to, it's unbelievable how real the stuff is that my son gets to enjoy.
The gaming industry. Yes, it has definitely changed and evolved. Well, you sound like you had an idyllic childhood. My husband did too. He says the same thing. I kind of grew up more in a rural area. My parents had land. And so I grew up with goats and horses. Yeah. But that was okay. I loved my goats. Bottle-fed some of them. Those were awesome memories. My best friend, though, lived a couple of miles away. And, of course, my parents would not allow me to ride my bike to her house. But my husband grew up like you did, a neighborhood full of kids. And he would say the same thing. He said they would leave. They would do all these adventures. They would make forts in the woods and the mom would not see them until dinner time. You know, that was it, you know, but such an idyllic childhood. Well, I know, let's talk about this for a minute, because I know, I think I read somewhere where you initially wanted to be an attorney. Is that correct?
Oh, wow, man, you're doing a little bit of research here. Yeah, I went to Georgia Southern, which is obviously a good decision because that's where I met my wife and somehow convinced her to marry me. She's a nurse, but it was at Georgia Southern. I majored in English because there's no pre-law degree. And I was going to be an attorney because growing up and not having much, you know, there are different paths, you think, the one that I knew that would allow me and being able to make an argument and be logical would be as an attorney. And I did not get accepted to University of Georgia Law School. It was darn dogs. And I was going to meet with the admissions counselor, and she explained the LSATs are good, but your GPA is a little bit lower than what the median is for this year's class. Reapply next year. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And sometimes I think Providence finds a way to put you where you're meant to be. And it was because of that that I went and met with my high school soccer coach at the high school I had graduated from. And we were going to go and have lunch together. And I bumped into the principal at that school who had been an administrator when I was a student. And she asked what I was up to, had a graduating degree in English, didn't get into law school, but I'll be reapplying. And she kind of cocked her head and raised an eyebrow and said, you know, Sean, we need English teachers. And of course, I laughed right out of the office. Miss Jackson, there's no way. I'm no teacher for sure. And the very next day, after talking with my coach, I was convinced that that was something that I should consider to do for a year before I reapplied. And my wife was still finishing up nursing school at the time. And so it was something that I honestly fell into, never having the intention of sticking with it. And I remember having that long distance call. There was no FaceTime or Zoom back in 1993. But I remember having that call with my soon to be wife and telling her around Thanksgiving, I know where I'm supposed to be and I don't need to reapply. And I love the classroom and obviously love the locker room. And it was the locker room that led to what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you did that, for 25 years? Is that right, Sean?
Yeah, about 28 total.
28 total.
You're a teacher and as a speaker. Yeah.
That is just so incredible. I know you learned a lot. You know, you learned a lot during that time as a teacher. Let me ask you that. So, like, you've coached everything from cross country to basketball to tennis. You know, what did those early years of teaching show you about leadership and adaptability?
I think that as a coach, and again, I got into coaching basketball not because I had a great background in basketball other than playing in the neighborhood. I really grew up playing soccer. And because I went back and I was teaching for the first few years at the high school that I had attended, many of the teachers knew me, some for good and some for bad. And one of my algebra teachers, who was the high school head coach of the basketball program, pulled me aside before the year began. Said, hey, Sean, we need a freshman coach. Would you be interested? And of course, my wife is still down finishing up, and I didn't have anything else to do in the afternoons. And I'd already agreed to do cross country and soccer, which is what I'd done mostly when I was actually a student. And I said, Coach Morgan, I don't know anything about basketball. He's like, John, I know the type of person you are. You'll be a good teacher. I can teach you the X's and O's. And I think that whether it is, literature or basketball or leadership or business, ultimately, our job as leaders is to be good teachers. And that's how I kind of describe myself. I'm still a teacher. It's just in a different venue with different students and organizations that bring you in for maybe a different curriculum. But I learned about leadership maybe less in my literature classroom than I did in the basketball locker room, because it's in the basketball locker room that early on you think everything's about X's and O's. And man, I got a really good play and we're going to be great because I've got a great play. And how many leaders, how many people in the audience listening now think, man, we built a great strategy. We've got good X's and O's. We're going to be just fine. That's only one of three necessary areas that leaders need to sustain success. And, with basketball and business, I think that you have to have strategy. You have to have talent. Everybody's in the talent acquisition business. But I failed early as a coach because I thought it was all about talent and strategy. And I neglected that third thing, which is culture. And obviously, that's what I spent the rest of my life building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've read that. You said, that most think, it's strategy, right? That's my number one priority. Yeah. And you said, no, the number one priority needs to be the culture. So I love that. Well, your first book was called The Unexpected Leader. And really, it started out as a story that you wrote for your players.
You have gone back and done a little bit of prep. I'm very much impressed and a little bit unsure whether I should be afraid of how much digging you've done.
I promise there's not anything that's going to be too embarrassing for you.
As a high school coach, you know, obviously teaching literature and being, you know, aware of the impact of stories, I wanted to share something with my players that would help to give them the foundational understanding of how much impact they could have, and that leadership wasn't a title, leadership wasn't a position, leadership is a choice that we make to have an influence on the people and the things that we care about. And you know, leading without a title is really what the story was about initially. And then as I started to get involved with organizations, do more corporate work, I realized that that story, although it is certainly focused upon basketball, it is something that, you know, pretty much anybody in an organization can read and apply, because leadership, and again, influence, isn't based on title or position. It's based on, you know, that, you know, intention and passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This might be of interest to you. Did you ever watch the series Ted Lasso?
Absolutely. Huge fan. Right.
A huge fan. Jenny and I, you know, my EA that you have met, we love that show. And so Donnie Campbell, the basketball coach that Ted Lasso was actually, you know, inspired, Ted Lasso, the character, has been on the podcast too, Sean. And it was so interesting because, you know, some of the things that you're talking about, like with the basketball coaching and, you know, that sort of thing, just so much of that applies even in the business world. And so I could not agree with you more. It's not about, you know, it's not about the title. It's really about how you show up. Right, as an individual. And that's so good. Well, you know, I know that, you know, let's talk a little bit about this. So Gallup reported that 70% of a team's engagement is influenced by their managers. I'm going to read that again. Mm-hmm. Gallup reported that 70% of a team's engagement is influenced by their managers. Wow. And your book, your latest book, I want to talk about that now, What Effective Leaders Do. I loved this, Sean. I'm going to read this. This is the first sentence in your preface. And I wrote in big letters, gold, gold. Here's what you said. As a basketball coach, I eventually learned that the most effective tool to accelerate player development was investing in my development as their coach.
I think that, again, basketball and all the lessons that I was, you know, very grateful to learn, sometimes through failure and sometimes through great mentors, absolutely translates over into any industry of business, because leadership is leadership and culture is culture. And the things that contribute to those things being done well and successfully, I think, are absolutely the same. And, you know, that very first year that I was a head coach, I took over a girls program at Pope High School here just west of Atlanta. And we had more talent than our record would have suggested my very first year. We won 5 games my first year as a head coach, Lisa. We lost 21. That's not a very good record. And we had more talent than that. And so at the end of the year, you know, when you have failure, again, it's I'll share a lot, you know, praise validates, but pain educates, if you allow. Mm. I'm looking in the mirror after they're kind of leaving the locker room, and the locker room that we had kind of just ended our season in after the playoffs that year. And I realized, you know, if things are going to be better, I needed to be better. There was something I wasn't doing. And that was kind of the beginning of my journey into discovering the impact of culture and camaraderie and expectations and relationships and trust and accountability and appreciation and all the things that now I help leaders and teams to hopefully incorporate so they can become more effective and they can build winning teammates in their organization. But everything came back to, your job as a leader is to point at yourself. And a powerful question I love to share when I'm coaching leaders is, what part of my leadership led to that outcome? Because we've all have outcomes that we're either proud of or that we're regretful for. And if you've gone through a season or a project and things didn't go as well as you know they could have, what part of my leadership? And maybe it's that I didn't communicate enough, or I didn't invest in the development of that person enough, or I wasn't clear. But what's the thing that I can claim control over so that next time I'm better and the team's better because I took ownership?
Mm-hmm. That is so good. All right. Now, I may be putting you on the spot here. And you can say pass if you don't want to answer this. But as you're talking, I'm going to ask you to be vulnerable. I mean, you just said that that first year you won five games and you lost, I think you said 21 games.
Reminding me, Lisa.
You know, and so you said really you were focused on the talent, but did not focus on the culture as much. Is there another story, Sean, in your leadership journey where you had an outcome and you could map it back to something that was lacking in you? Can you think of a story like that? I'm asking you to be vulnerable.
I think that my story vault is full of, look where I stepped in it here. Here's what you want to avoid as a leader because. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what happens to us as leaders is if we are vulnerable enough and you're willing to acknowledge our own mistakes, we make it that much, you know, more possible for other people to not suffer from the potholes that you kind of we ended up enduring. And absolutely. I think that in terms of dealing with players, I really do regret the first handful of years the way that I coach, because I was absolutely, and again, we talk about in my book, Staying Coachable, talk about, you know, there's four questions you need to ask to help people to stay coachable, because we all have people on our teams that we wish would listen better and apply better. And that starts with looking in the mirror and ourselves being coachable. Because I was always, as a leader, I was that command and coerce and consequence. And I was going to strong arm and twist arms and you got to do it this way. And this is how, and I think that, you know, ultimately that is unbelievably, you know, just unpleasant to play for. And I think that I was always aware as a coach of where we wanted to be or I thought we could get, but I was painfully aware of where we were and what that gap was. And so every day I'd show up to practice and we're closing the gap, we're getting better, and this is what we need to do differently. And I was horrible in praising and acknowledging progress, because progress motivates, not necessarily criticism. And so that was a huge thing for me, is realizing that a lot of the relationships with the players that I had were fractured and sabotaged because I was driving so hard at something that I wanted for them, but they didn't understand that I didn't have the awareness of how my criticism and what I categorized as coaching was harming our team performance. And I think that, you know, again, a lot of that comes back to, you know, me realizing what was that mistake that contributed to the performance I was witnessing.
Oh, that is so powerful. That is so powerful, Sean. And I have seen this played out in the business world, in teams where a leader is just wanting so badly, right? They think they know how we're going to improve things, right? And they want it so badly. But the criticism, I love what you just said. Criticism does not motivate. Yeah. Praise and progress. Right. That's, you know, you want more of that, you know, and somebody's going to respond so much better. Because how do they respond to criticism, Sean?
Oh, I can tell you how my athletes did, and how in coaching leaders, how their people do. And again, they pull away and they become less open, and they don't admit mistakes, and they don't look for advice, and they don't share ideas, because they shrug off and say it's just going to end up leading to some type of complaint or criticism or somebody pointing out what I'm lacking instead of what I'm doing. And that's not a good place for a leader to be.
That's so good. That's gold right there too. Well, we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Sean Glaze on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Sean Glaze. Sean, I do have a statistic here from Zippia Research that says 77% of businesses report that leadership is lacking. And I mean, you just told us about the way a leader approaches, you know, progress is, oh, you know, the criticism versus the praising the progress that's happened. So I'm so excited to really dig in more to your newest book. Like I said, that just came out in June, What Effective Leaders Do. I would really encourage our listeners, go out and get the book. I promise you it's going to help you. But I do want to ask you a few questions. So you talk about the ladder of awareness and how it helps leaders stop solving the wrong problems. That's really good. I mean, you don't want to solve the wrong problem. Getting clear probably on the actual problem and getting clarity is probably, you know, one of the first steps. But talk to us more about the ladder of awareness, Sean.
I think that, and I share this in my keynotes with audiences, Lisa, is leaders and team members don't get better because of experience. Experience alone, and we've all had that person that we've worked with who has years of experience, but they're the exact same person and still sabotaging things because of who they've chosen to remain. I think that people get better in whatever position, not because of experience, but because of awareness. And awareness, the way I define it with audiences, is awareness is what we notice in our experiences. And if I'm talking to a group of 600 people in a conference, there's going to be 600 versions of my keynote walking out the doors to a break because they're going to notice different things in the stories and activities that I would facilitate or share. And that's going to be what's relevant and meaningful to them. And I think the problem for us sometimes as leaders is we do make assumptions, and sometimes that lack of awareness is the thing that causes us to not be as effective as we are. And I think that there's four steps to becoming as aware as we need to be with every issue that we're dealing with. And again, another thing that I'll share is the most dangerous and costly issue on your team is the one that you haven't addressed. And the reason that many leaders don't address certain issues is because they're not aware of it. And I actually opened the book with the story of the main character walking downstairs and finding that the first floor of her house has been flooded. And that drip, that leak has been going on all night or for a while, and she wasn't aware of the issue. So that first thing is we're unaware, and there's damage being done, but we don't even see the damage, right? We don't see how that's impacting our team or our people. And so the unaware is the first level of awareness. We don't realize what that issue or problem or kind of circumstance might be. And the next step up from that is symptom aware. And this is where a lot of leaders will actually get stuck because they see the symptom and they'll complain about or point at somebody else who was responsible or at fault for the symptom. And they don't look beyond the symptom. Here's an example from when I was a coach. I had a player who would show up late. And I got really upset at the player because I was telling myself the story that this athlete was irresponsible or lazy or didn't care because he was showing up late. And that's the symptom. So you address the symptom and you consequence the kid, and he drops his chin and he does the running. And I wasn't ever curious or compassionate enough to look beyond the symptom. Because the problem that led to the symptom had nothing to do with him and his choices, but with his circumstance at home that I hadn't actually taken the time to inquire about. And when we get curious and compassionate, when we really look beyond the symptom, that's when you get to that third level, which is, what is the problem? Once you're problem aware instead of symptom aware, most of the time that solution becomes a whole lot easier to identify and to implement. And I think that those four levels, going from unaware to symptom aware to problem aware to then solution aware, those are the steps that every leader takes multiple times a week, depending upon what it is that's on their plate.
That is so good. That is so good. I love that. Well, and you kind of talked about this a little bit, the assumptions, because you assumed, right? You assume that this player really wasn't that committed, maybe a little lazy, that sort of thing. But what have you seen, because you've worked with a lot of leaders in a lot of organizations, what are some of those common assumptions that leaders make sometimes that are really damaging?
Well, you've been wonderful in sharing the book, and I thank you very much for referring that to your audience. And I do hope that they'll find value in it. But the book is basically a parable that within the story, you have this kind of wise mentor that shares four lessons, and each of the lessons kind of has four steps. The first is about the ladder of awareness, how that impacts culture. And then the second is about the assumptions that we make, about the stories we tell ourselves. And the mentor talks to the main character and basically shares, that there are four types of stories that you tell yourself as a leader, as a team member, that you need to take time to question, because the stories we tell ourselves determine the behaviors that we take. Our beliefs drive our behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I think the first question you need to ask yourself is about purpose, because especially for emerging leaders, people moving from a role as an individual contributor to somebody who is in the role as a manager now, that idea of purpose is something that's very difficult to shift in, to understand my job is not to produce results. My job is to produce results through people. And that, you know, being a leader is a very different set of skills than being a technical contributor in some other way. That's why not every athlete is a great coach. That's why not every good salesperson is a great manager, because they may be great at this thing, but acquiring a different set of skills is required when you actually become a leader versus that. And I think that identifying, you know, what is success in this role? That's a pretty powerful question to ask. And I think going into interview with somebody and I'm looking to, you know, change my role or to take on a new responsibility, you know, what is the difference between good and great in this role? What would success look like for me or for us in terms of what I can create? And I think that idea of purpose, what's the story you're telling yourself about what it is your role truly is? I think that's the first thing that oftentimes leaders kind of get lost with.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. Sean, we have a leadership division within Technology Partners. We're a full service IT firm, but what we realized is that sometimes what happens in technology, and I know it happens in other sectors as well, you will take your best technical architect, solution architect, and you said, okay, now you're going to lead a team. And the person's never had any training. Mm-hmm. And what we have found in our research is that the average age for a technical professional to be more in a supervisory role is about 27.
Oh, wow.
But they don't get any kind of training, leadership training, until they're 41. That's a big gap. So, you know, we recognize that. We bought a leadership company last year that we've incorporated now into our service offerings. But yeah, it's a big, big gap there.
That's the Zipia statistic, right? The 77% of leadership is lacking because, again,
yes,
it's promoted based upon technical excellence or skills, and they don't have the interpersonal set of skills that helps them to succeed in a different role.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the gap we're trying to fill for technology professionals. Well, the book talks about a leader's focus evolving. Why is moving from stuff to systems so important? And I do believe systems are very important, because that's what helps you scale.
Well, let me share with the listeners, because you were great in mentioning the idea of assumption. I think that purpose is one of those assumptions, but I go over the kind of three others and that idea of principles and what the values look like in your organization, and not assuming that people know what that looks like and what the parameters are. Assuming stories about your people. What are the stories you're telling about that person that when you read the subject line of an email, you're excited or you're kind of very much not looking forward to that interaction? Because we do, before an interaction, we tell ourselves a story about somebody. A lot of times we create a story and look for evidence to support that instead of being curious and compassionate. And the last one deals with politeness and leaders and team members understanding that nice is unkind. Nice for most people means I'm going to bite my tongue and not share something that would be helpful. And so those are the assumptions that are the kind of the second lesson that then lead into, and another new thing that the main character learns is that kind of third set of lessons, which is based upon, you know, what are those priorities that you need to have as a leader? And I think that that clarity of priorities is what leads managers to being more effective. Understanding the importance of awareness, understanding and being aware of the questions or the assumptions or the stories they're telling themselves, and then being intentional about how am I going to invest my time and my resources to help improve my team's performance. And I think that a lot of leaders get stuck, if you're thinking about that third lesson you mentioned, when you think about the importance of priorities, a lot of newer leaders especially, and even sometimes established leaders, focus on that lower level, which is, man, I'm just going to focus on stuff. Stuff is easy. Stuff doesn't talk back. Stuff doesn't ask questions. Stuff doesn't criticize me. I can get new posters. I can make sure I'm taking care of the printers. I can order us some, you know, new gear, whatever that stuff is. You can dress up a locker room or a conference room and you can provide stuff. And I'm not saying that stuff is bad.
Right.
That's where your only focus is. You're neglecting things that impact wins for your organization. There was no practice jersey or wall poster in our locker room that affected how many wins we had as a team. It was nice to have some of those resources and the stuff, but that didn't affect our wins. And for us to move from stuff to the next thing, we need to be willing to then see that our investment of time needs to have a result, right? And so the result of stuff doesn't really affect your wins and losses. And focusing on staff is that next step. And if I focus on my staff and my people and the development of the people around me, man, we're going to be better if they're better, right? And so focusing upon players, my players need to be better. We're going to do skill development. That is absolutely essential, but it's never sufficient, because to move from stuff to staff is an important step. But if you just stop on staff, you're neglecting the single most powerful entity that is in charge of your development and your team's growth, which is the person in the mirror when you're brushing your teeth, and that is yourself. And so I tell leaders, you know, you're going to go from stuff to staff, and then the next step is going from staff to self. What do you see in yourself? How can you improve yourself and your awareness and your leadership and your understanding and your knowledge and your wisdom? And I think that self-development, you know, growing our awareness of ourselves, affects everything else. And as you climb that ladder, every step you take improves everything that kind of comes underneath that. When I start focusing on staff, the printers don't get broken because they know how to use them. When I start focusing on myself, my staff gets better because I'm able to coach them better and have better interactions if I focused on myself first.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. There's so much richness packed in there. So much richness. Do you know, you might know, Mark Miller. Do you know Mark Miller?
Absolutely. Mark does a fantastic job coming out of Chick-fil-A. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Love him. And you know, he calls the stuff that you're talking about the quicksand.
Right.
And so many leaders get caught in the quicksand. It's almost impossible to get out of that. Right. But if you are only, if you're stuck in the quicksand, you're not really focusing on the most important things and the things, like you said, that are going to really help you win. Mm-hmm. And that's, I tell you, we always say your staff's going to be a lot more excited and they're going to be a lot more engaged when your organization is winning, Sean.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a lot more motivating to be on a winning team. So, yeah, that's so good. Well, you talk a lot about confidence. Confidence is a huge theme in the book. How can leaders build confidence? And let's talk about the confidence. And we're not talking about hubris. We're not talking about, you know, being arrogant. I mean, there's a difference, right? But, you know, how can they increase their confidence without being arrogant?
You're walking me through the book. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful kind of Sherpa here through the subject matter. And I would share just for your listeners, because I know you mentioned it and I neglected to add this to my previous response. I think that that last thing that needs to be a priority after you go from stuff to staff to self is, how do you build systems? Because my job as a parent, my job as a coach, my job as a teacher, my job as a leader in any industry is to make myself unnecessary in most regards. And I want to grow the people around me to the point where they appreciate and look to and value me, but they are competent on their own. And I think that that idea of building systems, where if you were absent for 3 weeks, does everything fall apart, or can people follow the systems that you've documented so that the team continues to thrive, even though one of those components, maybe you, maybe someone else, was removed for a while. And that leads to, obviously, confidence. And I had a lot of experience in trying to build confidence with athletes, because athletes would be very easily frustrated when they couldn't do something well. And I was one of those. If you took me to a golf course, I'm very easily frustrated because it's not something I'm good at. And I think that confidence is something that, when you're thinking about not just athletes, but then members of your team, when they attempt something and they're not good at it, it's very easy to get deflated. Mm-hmm. And I think that confidence, and what I would share with our players, is you've got to be willing to be bad long enough to get better. If I'm talking with leaders about leading one-on-one conversations more effectively, or even leaders who have never started one-on-ones to build relationships and rapport and do coaching with their people, it's going to be awkward the first couple of times that you do it, but you got to be willing to be bad long enough to get better. And we do well what we do often. And so our job is to, again, Steph Curry, the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA, misses 54% of his shots. Even at the unbelievable, excellent professional level, there's still a lot of failure and imperfection involved. But think about somebody who is that proficient and competent. He had to be bad long enough to get better. And everybody that we would go through form shooting or ball handling or whatever it was that we were teaching as a skill, they had to be willing to be bad long enough to get better and to realize nobody makes all their shots when they start, but you can't get good unless you're willing to be bad. And I think that that first level of competence or of confidence is the courage to then start something that you're not good at, to have a difficult conversation that you know is needed, but you're not really necessarily comfortable with. And I think courage is the first thing that allows us to be imperfect. That courage mm-hmm. leads to getting clarity about what do I need to do differently or better. Mm-hmm. If I have the courage to step into a necessary and uncomfortable circumstance or skill, that first experience gives me more clarity on this is the thing that I need to work on to be better at for the next iteration or for the next meeting, for the next project. And that leads to cultivation. And cultivation is when you actually have intentional practice, when you role play something as a salesperson to get over objections, where you do a better job because you're practicing the skill that you know is necessary. And then the final thing is competence. And competence is very simply being able to do something well, even in adversity. And if you are competent, you know, that's going to be the thing that gives you confidence. I tell people you never want to fake it until you make it.
Yeah.
Because that's false confidence. And I think people notice that discomfort of when you're trying to pretend that you're something that internally maybe you don't feel like. I think you need to give yourself permission to be imperfect and to have the courage to step into and be vulnerable. Hey, guys, listen, we've not tried this before, but I think it's important for us to because blank. And I'm willing for us to be imperfect so that we can blank and we're going to get better if we'll invest in. But I think that that idea of competence being the foundation of any real confidence is where most leaders can benefit from realizing imperfection is okay early.
So, Sean, that is so good. I could not agree more. Competence will lead to confidence, right? But competence takes practice.
Absolutely.
And I say that all the time. I'm like, there are very few things I believe that you can't get better at.
Right.
Your IQ is kind of set, right? That's kind of set. But I always say like EQ, you know, these, you know, leadership skills, we can get better at them, but it takes practice. It takes practice. So I've got just one more question for you. And then let's talk about something extra. Okay.
Right.
Today's world looks a lot different than it did pre-pandemic. I was just talking to a friend yesterday, you know, and her team is spread out. I mean, really, she's hiring people all over the country now. And we have these hybrid and remote teams. But what have you seen? What are those things that you believe leaders can do to make that situation even more effective?
Yeah. And this is, as you might imagine, a pretty common conversation you have in coaching.
Yes.
A leader who has a hybrid team or has a remote team where there's somebody, you know, even in a different country, not even just in a different state.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea of leadership, and this is, I firmly believe leadership doesn't change and trust isn't built because of proximity. It's built because of intentional investment in relationships and being curious and being compassionate and being vulnerable and being transparent and acknowledging issues, et cetera, et cetera. And so that idea of leading effectively in a hybrid or remote environment, the steps and the curriculum of sorts is exactly the same, The issue is, and this is why people will bring me in sometimes for team building, I believe, is because they'll have an annual retreat, and this is the first time that 35% of their staff has ever met each other because they've just been hired or they were at a different part and they weren't part of the office. And so coming in to give them a chance to build connections that are going to improve and establish a trusted relationship so people do collaborate better and share mistakes and offer advice and look for ideas. I think those are the things that leaders need to intentionally engineer those interactions. And obviously, that idea of, if I've got, 7 or 8 people that are my direct reports, I need to be touching base with them every week, not because there's something on fire, but because I want to make sure that I'm checking in and I know what they're working on, what's happening to them outside of, how can I be of service, what I need to coach them through, what is it something that I can look ahead for them and maybe clear some obstacles that might be in their way. I think that familiarity and that level of care and concern is something that builds a team. And I talk a lot with leaders, especially with remote and hybrid teams, because it's true in basketball, but it's absolutely true in business. There are people looking to poach your locker room. What are those loyalty anchors that you need to have in place to keep the people in your locker room from going somewhere else? And I think that idea of if you've got talented people, you want to make sure that they feel understood and cared for and supported and encouraged and challenged and all the other things that you're only going to learn if you're really investing in those things intentionally. And so absolutely the idea of leadership is the same, but I think that making our meetings more effective, making sure that we are clarifying those values of how we're going to interact together, making sure that people understand what asynchronous communication is going to be available so they can think about and contribute in different ways. I think that those are all things that leaders can do more intentionally. And I think designing those experiences and understanding what a team needs and how do we make that happen in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Designing intentionally. Designing intentionally. That's good. Well, can I ask you a question? And I wasn't, I would love to know this. We're going to talk about something extra. This is called something extra. And the question I usually ask is, what do you believe is the something extra every leader needs? But I'm going to ask you a question. Do you know what your something extras are? What are the things, Sean, that make you an effective leader and coach?
It's the same for me as it would be for any leader, Lisa. And I think you would acknowledge it's exactly the same for you. And when I'm having a conversation with a prospective client, we're talking about when an event's going to be able to create in terms of outcome or maybe a coaching relationship. Ultimately, our growth and improvement depends upon increasing our awareness. I needed to be more aware of what could contribute to a culture in order to implement those cultures. And I think that for leaders, there's only 3 ways that you can improve your awareness. And the something extra that we all need are at least one, and hopefully all 3 of those 3 areas or 3 kind of avenues to improve our awareness. The first is reflection. And I've got on my website a list of questions for reflection that people can get out of my toolbox. But are you taking time to intentionally ask meaningful questions in the morning or in the evening to make sure that you're better the next day following interactions from the previous day? And reflection is pretty powerful. The issue is we don't always see ourselves clearly.
Right.
We need the benefit of other people's perspectives. And so the second thing that leaders need beyond reflection is feedback. Who's somebody on your team that you would trust to give you objective and valuable, helpful feedback? And can you ask them just one specific focused question and then be unbelievably grateful for their response and let them know how you've changed because of that in a few days? And you can do that over Zoom. You can do that over a coffee. But hey, I'm trying to make myself better. I understand that one of the areas I might be able to get better in is blank. What's something that you've noticed that would help me be better in this role? And that gives you a chance to get things from other people that you wouldn't have had the thought to reflect on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is coaching. And the reason that coaching is so important is that any high achiever, whether it's athletics or business, every high achiever is going to have a coach to help them to be better, to help them to see opportunities for improvement where they can perform better that they wouldn't have thought of otherwise. And a coach's job is to ask questions that you and your team members wouldn't have thought of if I hadn't introduced them. And I think that that idea of reflection and feedback and coaching, those are the three ways that we can improve our awareness. And that awareness is absolutely always going to be the something extra that we need to do for our team.
Ah, that's beautiful. I love it. I love it. I just had breakfast with a leader yesterday that leads a very large organization. And this person said that they have a coach, that they are coaching with somebody every month. I mean, they're coaching other people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've got a very large organization, but somebody's pouring into them because we all have blind spots, Sean. Newsflash. Yeah. If you think you don't.
The younger version of ourselves that convinced themselves, I know it all, right? That's the difference between confidence and arrogance, right?
Yes.
Thinking I can help versus thinking I don't need help.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So good. So good. I'm going to go back to that first line. As a basketball coach, I eventually learned that the most effective tool to accelerate player development was investing in my development as their coach. So it starts with us. Starts with us. And you have to have the awareness to know that you need that. But thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I know that this is going to really be helpful to our listeners, Sean. Listeners, please go out and get the book. I promise you, go check out Sean's website. He's got tools out there. Please follow him. He's got great content that I know is going to help you on your leadership journey. And one thing I failed to mention, and I feel so badly about this, Sean, I have to give a shout out to our mutual good friend, Bob Teedy. Love Bob Teedy, Leading with Questions. If he had not connected us, Sean, you and I may not have crossed paths. And so I'm so grateful for him. Yes, for sure. So shout out to Bob. Thank you, Bob. You're amazing.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. Sean, thanks so much again for being on the show today.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks so much for being a wonderful host, Lisa. Appreciate you and look forward to staying in touch in the future.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.